Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Islam, Hotel, Barigani. What's happening in peace? January 12th through the 13th, Jacksonville, Florida, we will have Summit of the Moors. This is a collective effort to bring about economic security that is a great opportunity for our people to forecast their own future, beginning with a collective approach that can benefit all. The educators, the speakers are all diverse to represent the people who are also diverse in their ideologies. On deck, we have Kadara Bey, Dr. Aileen Bey, Julani Bey, Tahaka Amina L. Bey, Abundance Child, Sundiata L., Daraya Bey, the Federation of Southern Cooperative, German Shannon L., Sharif Noble, and myself, Asar Dalo Saku Abur L. Topics will be food security, such things as aquaponics, gold and silver purchasing, technology, cooperative application, the administrative process, and lots more. We also have what's called private science sessions. These sessions will not be recorded, any recording, audio or visual, for the public. You have to be in person in order to get these jewels. And we also have some special guests who didn't want to be advertised that will come and drop more information. I'm urging everyone to go to www.dalosaku.com and register. This is free. This is a free event. It is www.dalosaku.com. DialoSekou.com. January 12th through the 13th, Jacksonville, Florida, Summit of the Moors. Peace.
Welcome, Moors. Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And tonight from the Moorish American Archives, we're dealing with Trust Law Secrets Revealed. And what we're going to do is use this as a follow-up from the last show I did yesterday. We'll want to get it firmly fixed in your mind how the mechanics of this trust law thing work, how it works in the court, and how you can put this thing together for yourself and exercise your authority. So, therefore, without further ado, now keep in mind that this information here does not come out of my archives, and I listen to this stuff, and it's very, very powerful information, very, very valuable information. However, the guys that's delivering this information, they cussed about four times. I don't like that, but you know, the information is too valuable, so I wouldn't have made a decision to go ahead and put it on there. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we've created one of the most comprehensive libraries in the United States, and the way to access that, and which carries your tools so you can put this information into play for yourself, is by contacting me at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We get you in there. We're also offering our free articles as usual. Just hit me up at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll send those to you. Okay? Now, what we're going to do is we're going to ease on in this thing, and our first plug will last about 25 minutes. So if you got paper and pencil, go ahead and jot down your notes or whatever it is that you have to do, because these guys here, they're actually out there doing this thing, and it works for them, it works for me, and there are many, many other brothers across the United States that's using the same mechanics here, and they're having a great deal of success. So y'all sit back and hold your hat, and let's let this thing ride here.
All right, greetings and salutations, my fellow YouTubian nation. This is Chris, and I hope you've enjoyed your day or are about to enjoy your day. All right, I've been learning a lot recently. I primarily have to say I have to thank my father for this, because of what happened with his death, I've had a lot of time to think. I could have dealt into depression and things like that, but I've always been one of those people, you turn something good out of something bad. So I started with the free time I had in between, you know, going to the funerals and organizing paperwork and stuff like that. I've been doing a lot of productive things with my free time. One of the things I'll get into in another video. Primarily, I've been studying trust law. And it's actually very easy once you learn the basics of it. And I just want to let people know I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not trying to give legal advice. I can only talk for my own country, United States of America Corporation. If you don't live in the United States of America Corporation, you first may drop your cell phone. Let me just make sure this works. See what happens. Yep, still working. All right. So as I was saying, if you live in another country, your laws may be different, so you might want to check into them. But pretty much from what I'm assuming, a lot of the primary laws are the same. It all starts out with God's law. Now, whether you want to believe in God or not is irrelevant. And again, I'm going to talk just about the United States of America Corporation. I'm not going to talk anywhere else. You would have to verify in your own country, so keep that in mind. But if you see everywhere, it has to do with God's law. In other words, in God we trust. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Okay? It's even in the Declaration of Independence. The word God is used in several accounts of law. So our laws are based on God's law. Whether, again, you believe in God or not is irrelevant. That's what the laws are based on. So that's what we have to follow. According to God's law, God created man. Whether you, again, you know, anyway, you should understand that. God created man. Man was given dominion over the earth. So he was free to roam the earth and to be able to do whatever they wanted, provided you were not infringing on somebody else's rights. So in other words, if you weren't stealing from somebody, you weren't trying to kill somebody, as long as you weren't trying to harm somebody, you were free to do whatever you wanted. Well, man at some point, for whatever reason, got corrupt and got greedy and started keeping us from God's law and started creating man's law or common law. And it is separate and different from the God's law that man was supposed to abide by. And it all has to do with corruption and money. Unfortunately, that's what everything always boils down to, is money. How things are started. A trust is what happens every time some situation is occurring when it has to do with law. In other words, if you're selling a property, if you are opening a bank account, if you are creating a will and testament, for example, even a traffic ticket, they all create a trust that is involved in that moment. Now, how do you know what roles to play? Well, knowledge is very important when it comes to law. And you'll hear the term, ignorance is no excuse of the law. And this could be very helpful or very painfully troublesome to you if you do not become familiar with law. Now, there's a difference between legal and law. And that is up to you to figure out. But a trust is created every time, including your birth. Now, they use symbols to indicate what something is. Like, for example, and again, I can't speak for any other country, if you see a red octagon-shaped sign at an intersection, even if it didn't have words in it, what would that signify? Well, that would be a stop sign, wouldn't it? And even, again, if it's supposed to say the word stop, but if it, even if it didn't have it, you would know to stop at that particular intersection because of that symbol. So even all the way back to the Roman and Greek empires, especially the Roman empires, they used symbols to quickly determine what something was. Now, your name in all capital letters is a sign. It signifies that that particular item in all capital letters is a what they call a lawful fictional entity. It's a corporation. It doesn't exist. It's your legal person. And you will notice it on your birth certificate. You will notice it on your driver's license or any government form, marriage license, etc. Now, the trick is when you're born, your parents bring you and you get a receipt of birth, otherwise known as your birth certificate, and you'll see your name in all corporate letters. That is a trust that starts. Now, the way it's supposed to work is there is the grantor, which is your parents, the beneficiary, which is the person that benefits from the trust, that is you, because you benefit from being who you are, and then the government is the trustee. In other words, they are there to take care of you. Now, if you do not know the roles, ignorance is no excuse of the law. And things in law have to do with presumptions. And a lot of it has to do with telling people who you are. Now, if you want to learn this in better detail than what I can provide, from somebody that's done it a lot longer than me, one of the people I recommend on YouTube, his name is Dean Clifford. D-E-A-N, and then Clifford. C-L-I-F-F-O-R-D. I learned a lot from him. So I highly recommend his videos. When I get home, I will place that in the information box, and you just search that name up on YouTube. Very long, but very worth it. So when you create that trust, according to God's law, man is supposed to roam freely on the earth. So everything has been paid for in advance under your corporation. They just don't tell you about this. They create a trust in your name. Now, if you want to think of a trust, because corporate law, corporate trust, is the same as the trust that I'm speaking of. Because let's just say, for an example, you're about to create a movie. Now, there are three parts to making a movie. You'll have the director. The director is the person that's in charge of directing the movie. Okay, so in trust law or corporate law, it would be the executor or the administrator, because they are making the executive decision. They are administrating. So they, in other words, they're telling people what to do. So think of it that way. The director of the movie is the director or, like I said, the administrator. Now, he would have employees. The employees would be the trustees. In other words, they are in charge of making the movie, but they have to do what the director tells them. Otherwise, you'll get fired. So employees would be like the people who work the camera, the actors, you know, the hairstylist, anybody that works under the director has to do what the director tells them. Now, there's a third part to this trust. That is the shareholders. They are what's called the beneficiaries. In other words, they're investing money in this movie to benefit from it and make some kind of money. Now, a director can tell a trustee what to do, but a beneficiary can tell the director and administrator what to do. For example, if, let's say, the director, let's say you're directing Spider-Man 12, and the director is always coming in late, he's drunk, or he argues with the people, and nothing's getting done, you as the primary shareholders can fire that director if he is not giving you the benefit that you are entitled to in this trust. So a beneficiary of a trust can allocate or get rid of an administrator can fire an employee. In other words, let's say the employee comes in late all the time, or the actor just doesn't want to listen to direction. Well, that actor or that employee can get fired by the director. The trustee or the employee cannot tell the director what to do and cannot tell the shareholders what to do. So they are the least powerful in the entire sequence of situations. The director has the power, but the beneficiary can tell what their director can and can't do. They can fire them or replace them. Okay? So you don't want to be the trustee when it comes to corporate law or trust law, because if you are the trustee, you have to do what the administrator tells you to do. It's just like being an employee and your boss tells you what to do. Well, you could refuse to do it, but what will happen? You'll get fired. If you steal from the company, guess what? You're getting arrested. You have no say in it. So the last person you want to be when you go to court is the trustee, because you have to do what the administrator tells you. Now, there's a thing in law called compliance. Compliance means you agree with something or you disagree with something. Now, there's a third way. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. When you comply, you only agree or you can be silent. If you disagree, you're not complying, so forgive me on that. I apologize. But here's the thing about silence. I'll give you a prime example. And I put things with examples because it makes things a lot easier for you to understand them. Let's say you're at a dinner table, and there's about five of you. And you're all sitting there, you're all taking your food, you're getting everything, and you're eating dessert now. And there's one last cookie left on the table. Now, if I was one of the five people and I said, I'm going to take that last cookie, people can either say, no, I want it, or yes, you can have it, or they could say nothing. If all the other four people decide to say nothing, they have not contested my claim, which is the same as them saying, yes, it's yours. So if I say, I'm going to take that cookie, and nobody else says anything, I have, according to the law, the legal right to take that cookie, because no one has said you can't have it, or they didn't say, oh, we should share it. They complied through silence. So that's where they take advantage of you in the court of law. Because in the court of law, the reason that the judge has the power to tell you what to do is because when you are notified in court, or you are asked who you are, if you just say your name, let's say your name is Joe Smith, well, who do they care who Joe Smith is in this? Like, for example, if you walked into, let's go back to the movie reference, they're having a business meeting with the shareholders, and they're talking about what's going on in the movie. And you walk into that meeting, and they say, well, who are you? Well, I'm John. They'll be like, who the fuck are you? John who? Get out of here. We don't need you. You haven't signified anything about what you represent. You just said a name. But if you go in there again, and they say, well, who are you? And you say, I'm John Smith. I am the primary shareholder of this movie. Well, guess what? Well, welcome in, sir. Come on in. Tell us what you think. You've established who you are. And in law, because it has to do with, you have to announce who you are. Because if you don't, they will assume the roles of administrator and beneficiary. Now, you can be the beneficiary and the administrator in trust law. You can be both. Again, go to the movie reference. A stockholder can appoint anybody to be director. They can appoint themselves if they want to. Okay, so a administrator can be a beneficiary. They could be both. A trustee can only be a trustee. It cannot be anything else. An employee cannot tell a boss what to do, and it cannot tell the shareholders what to do. So trustees have very limited power. So in court, if you do not tell the people who you are and what role you play, they automatically, through default and through your own negligence or ignorance, become the administrator, which is the judge, and the beneficiary, which is the prosecutor, both working for government. And you automatically become the trustee. Why? Because you haven't announced who you are, and you didn't contest that. And they're not going to tell you what to do to protect yourself. And I'll give you another example. Let's say there's a pool tournament, and there's a $1 million prize, and you want to win that $1 million, but you don't know how to play pool. But you decide, you know what, I have faith, I have hope, you know, I'll believe in myself, I could win, and you go in the tournament. And your first round, you play with a pool shark. You see him fooling around with the pool. He's doing all these tricks and all these different things. And that's the first person you play. Well, guess what? Do you think you're going to win if you don't know how to play pool, if you've never picked up a pool stick, never played pool in your life, and you're playing against a professional pool shark? You have any chance of winning? No. Now, is it his fault that you did not prepare? Is it his fault that you lost? And let's say, for example, because first of all, he's not going to say, okay, what you really should do is that shot you're about to do is not the best shot. You should try this one. He's not going to tell you that. But he might do this. He might say, well, you know what? You should try for that shot just to trick you. And let's say he tells you, you know what you should do? You know nothing about pool? You should go sink the eight ball right off the bat. You'll win. And if you sink the eight ball, you lose. Well, guess what? Is it his fault that you were too stupid to know what was going on and you just believed what he said because it sounded good? That's what they do in law. Ignorance is no excuse. You have to claim title of who you are. And again, I'll use another reference. Let's say you, and this is one that Dean Clifford used, and it's a great analogy. Let's say you're watching a hockey game, and you see a bunch of skaters on the ice, and you want to know who the goalie is. If you point to one of the players that has a name on his jersey, and you go to one of your friends, who is that? And they say, well, that's Fred. You'll be like, well, Fred who? It doesn't mean anything. But if they say, oh, that's Fred the goalie, they've established who he is. So that's where they trick you in law is, I'm just going to make sure this is still working. There we go. Sorry about that. I just want to make sure that I'm not doing this for nothing because I did this before and it just it didn't work. But that's how they trick you in law. If you go into a courtroom and your name is Joe Schmo and they say, you know, who are you? And you say, well, I'm Joe Schmo. They'll be like, oh, well, you know, in their minds, they're going to think, oh, that's great because you haven't established who you are, so we're going to take those roles. And because you're too stupid to contest it, you're not going to debate it. And that's why a judge can have authority over you, and that's why you become the trustee, because the trustee has to do whatever the judge, the administrator of that trust, tells you to do. And if you don't do it, that's why you see sheriffs come and take you away and enforce it, because otherwise you are in breach of trust, and you have to comply to administrator's decisions. And there's no way to change that. There's no way around that, unless you know the system. So the next time you go to court, now this is provided you haven't caused injury to someone. If you've killed somebody, if you've gotten into an accident where you've damaged somebody, it's a whole different ballgame. Because under God's law, you are free to do whatever you want unless you infringe on somebody else's rights. So this isn't going to help somebody that's infringed on somebody's rights. If you've stolen from somebody, if you've drunk drove, if you've committed murder or assault or something, you've inflicted damage on somebody, you've infringed on their rights. So this will not apply to you. But if you are somebody, let's say, for example, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you are at a traffic light, there's nobody on the road, and you went through a red light. They can give you a ticket, but it's not enforceable if you know the law, because you haven't infringed on anyone's rights. But what happens is, because you go to court, if you go to court, you comply with it, they place a judgment and you are authorized to pay it, because you have waived your rights. Ignorance is no excuse in the law. So when you go to a court case, and again, it's assuming you haven't done anything to infringe on somebody's rights. When they call you up and say who you are, you start out by saying, I am the man in question in this matter. And they'll say, well, what is your name? At that point, you say, I am the executor, administrator, and beneficiary of this trust. And you are the public trustee. And they'll probably go crazy. They'll probably get angry. They'll probably scream at you. Oh, you're in contempt of court. And all you have to say is, excuse me, sir, are you not a public servant? What are they going to say? No, we're not. And that's the trick. The government is the public trustees. They're the public servants. They're there to serve you. But because we are ignorant and of the law, and it's not our fault because they don't teach it, we're led to believe that we owe all this money and we're supposed to, every time there's a new statute or code created, we're supposed to be paying it. It's not true. It's only true when you waive your rights and you don't know about the law and you do not contest their presumptions. Because that's what courts are all about. It's presumption. And if I go into court and not state who I am, they are making the presumption that they are in control. Like it or not, that's not their fault if you don't know it. Just like the pool game. If you listen to the person and he's lying to you, he's going to win every time. And if you don't know how to play the game and he's a professional pool player, he's going to win every time. And it's nobody's fault but your own. But that's what this society has been created to be. A bunch of people that are waiting for somebody else to jump on the proverbial white horse and save the day, a.k.a. people like Ron Paul. People have to take responsibility for their own actions. We can't wait for other people to do things because it's not going to be for our best interest. And here's the beautiful thing. Their scam that has worked for hundreds of years is now going to turn against them. Because once we've established that we know that our names are corporations, legal fiction, the legal person, and the beneficiary of the trust is us, once we claim it, we have all rights to it. So if I go to court, let's just say for a speeding ticket, and I haven't hurt anybody, haven't injured anybody, and I'm contesting this ticket, when I go to court, I'm going to say, and I'm just going to say my name is Chris Johnson. They say, who are you? I say, well, I'm the person that's been in question of this situation. I say, well, what is your name? Well, I am the administrator, executor, and beneficiary of this trust. And you as the public trustee have been established. And at that point, they are the trustee. And as we talked about with trustees, they have no power. And I can tell them what to do. So you have to learn the law and real law to know how to get out of situations that they trick you into being into. Because they're not going to say, oh, you should try this word. It will help you. No judge is going to do that. Because if they know they got you hook, line, and sinker, and you're going to get fined a couple hundred thousand dollars or end up in jail where they can make a hell of a lot of money on you, they're going to do it. So the more you learn, the more prepared you're going to be. So I want people to start learning about trust law. And look up this guy. Again, his name is Dean Clifford. He will put it in a good perspective. He's like the typical guy on the street. He's been arrested hundreds of times, but never convicted on anything. Hasn't paid taxes in 17 years. Now, he's Canadian, so I don't know how much of it is the same as the United States of America Corporation, but pretty much the law, according to God's law, should be the law of the land. So that should comply to everybody. Statutes and codes may be different, but the law of the land of God, again, whether you believe in God or not, it's irrelevant because they base their laws according to God's law. They change the rules, and if you don't know about it, whose fault is that? So that's why I always say you've got to take responsibility for what you do. And that's why you don't even need a lawyer. Because first of all, a lawyer is working for the government. They do not work for you. They make money. They become a limited liability of who they represent. In other words, they can't take full liability because if you get thrown in jail, they would too. So they only represent you in limited liability. And they're not going to tell you these things. So they're working in conflict of trust because they're not informing you that they work for the judge in one way, shape, or form. So if you think you have a lawyer defending you, he doesn't have to do everything right because he's not the one that suffers the consequences. So unless you have incredible amounts of money to buy the best lawyers, pretty much the best they can do is probably drop your charges. Or, well, actually not even drop them, probably reduce them. But you're still paying something. So if you learn the law the right way and how it really works, you don't even need a lawyer. Because the law, God's law, never changes. You cannot supersede God's law. But they will trick you through ignorance and intimidation to think that you have to pay for a red light. Now, I don't recommend people going through red lights all the time because if you're a stupid person and you decide, well, because I have the ability to go through a red light, I'm going to go through at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, go through a major intersection and just go through the red light. Well, you're an idiot. And you're probably going to kill yourself or kill somebody else. And if not, you could damage somebody, which you'll be liable to. The whole idea is being responsible. It's like the health insurance issue. People in the United States of America Corporation do not want that Obama law passed because it's making insurance mandatory, which is telling you you have to have it. In the long run, it would help you if you had it, but you're not required to have it. So in other words, you take the liability for the mistake if you needed it and you don't have it. And that's how they get you. So, another long video. I'm going to pretty much stop it from here because I pretty much said what I needed to say. Now, you could base things in your life on either believing in it, basing it on your feelings, basing it on what you're told, or research. If you want to say my thing is out of this world or crazy or whatever, if you do not research it, what are you basing it on other than what you've been told, what you feel, or what your opinion is of it? You've not presented any facts. So what I suggest is you research trust law. Corporate law and trust law are pretty much the same, just different terminology. You don't want to be the trustee, and it doesn't matter what your name is. So I've even learned that about the whole thing, oh, I'm not a person. Well, of course you're a person. You have to establish what person you are. So you don't have to go into court and saying, oh, well, it's a non-fictional character, and that's not me and everything. Well, they don't care. They have to establish who you are, and they'll test you. So be firm with your decision. Otherwise, you will be held in contempt of court. Because if you say all these things and then they question you, intimidate you, and you back down, well, then they'll say to yourself, well, you really aren't the person you claimed. Because the person that would claim that wouldn't back down. So you're in contempt. You can go to jail for that. Like, for example, if I walked into a business meeting and I told everybody, I'm Bill Gates, somebody would probably contest that. And if I couldn't prove it, I might get nervous or I might change my mind. Oh, I was just kidding. I wasn't really Bill Gates. Well, if Bill Gates walked into the room and said, hi, I'm Bill Gates, and somebody contested that and said, you're not Bill Gates, you think he's going to back down? He's going to be like, who the fuck are you? I'm Bill Gates. Here.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's pretty much the gist of what we discussed on the previous broadcast about trust law. It's just a matter of you occupying the vacant office, and a lot of us go into the courtroom not having this knowledge, and they just run shot over you. They're not going to tell you. They call your name, you answer to the name. You don't let them know that you are occupying the office. You haven't done anything to file anything into the court, making it perfectly clear to the court before you get there that you're occupying the office and assigning it to the case and making sure you assign it to the judge. So he got his hand, so he's got no choice but to take his position as a trustee. Now, if you got loved ones in the prison, they can't come out and speak, so you they can delegate you as trustee of the state, and you can wield the power. But either way it goes, you want to make it clear that you're occupying the office. And I just want to bring these guys in so that you can hear it from someone else based on what we tried to tell you on the previous broadcast. Now, he mentioned Dean Clifford, so we're going to hear from old Dean himself. Y'all sit tight.
Time. Okay, so some quick background then, since we're having our first video tutorial, I guess, at our new office that's not quite finished yet for World Freeman Society / my own organization once it gets up and running, and our webmaster actually gets some stuff finished up here. But background, I've already discussed at times some of my background with you guys a little bit. But essentially for 12 years now, I think, longer actually, I haven't filed income taxes or paid income taxes in 17 years now. I've never been successfully taken to court against Canada Revenue Agency. My philosophy for the longest time was to just stay out of court altogether and never go there. Even if they charged me with something, I figured I'd just ignore it, never go there, not have to worry about it, learn to live invisible from government, and that was the solution to everything. So that led me to my first court appearance, where I got arrested and was up on a couple of charges for Highway Traffic Act violations, 4 failures to appear on those charges, 2 failures to appear for fingerprinting, obstruction of a peace officer. I think there's about 9 charges altogether, and I was now in for my first court appearance unprepared because I said I was never going to go to court and I was never going to play their game. Right? So that led me to a 3-day trial that I called the trial by fire, and I think I'd already known, I'd known you guys already by then,
yeah,
where I just disappeared for a while and wound up walking out of a courtroom in Brandon after 3 days, a free man. And that's when things all really started to come together. When I finally understood what was working and what wasn't working, what reactions were getting results in court, and what led to them convicting me on the facts, even though I tried to plead guilty to the facts for 3 days, they wouldn't let me. They said, no, you have to plead guilty with the understanding you've done something wrong. And I said, no, I said, I don't care. That even if you guys convict me, I don't care. What do I care if you guys convict me? I haven't done anything wrong. Go ahead. Ooh. After the 3rd day, I started talking like that. And you could tell they were starting to do this. And you know, they didn't know what to do, and they ended up convicting me on all 9 charges and discharging them immediately. And, oh, Mr. Clifford, we're going to discharge everything right away, though. And I'm like, what do I care? I don't care. Well, okay, well, but so how does a $50 fine sound? I said, it sounds like something I'm not going to pay. I don't care, right? I don't care. I'm done. Are we done now? It's been 3 days. Can I leave now? Right? Never heard about it again, except they tried contacting me several months later and asking where the $50 was, which I'm not even going to get to that phone conversation, but I never heard from them ever again after that. So that's some of my background, and ever since then, that was more than a year and a half ago, things have accelerated. We've far surpassed a lot of anybody that we ever did any learning off of. We've had successes in court. We've had successes with notices to the government, driving with our own private plates. I'm mad because the night before I got arrested in November, I was supposed to switch to my private plate, and I got arrested because my plate was expiring at midnight, and they pulled me over for driving with no license when I was about to switch to my next plate anyways. And he got arrested for being my witness, for driving out to the middle of the middle of winter on the perimeter to be my witness. But so he got to put the private plate on his car first, and he's been almost 2 months now. Oh, anytime. Yeah. So aside from the driver's licenses, and I think about almost 2 years ago now, we started sending off the new e-cores everybody's familiar with, that we've at this point basically just abandoned altogether as being completely irrelevant and useless. The only useful part of the new e-core was the fee schedule. We've gotten into all that kind of stuff. And now we've gotten to the point where we're comfortable that when we're teaching people stuff and sending people into court to do stuff, that they've won because we're doing it. And so now we want to start getting that information out there and refuting a lot of the information that's out there. A lot of this is my own personal opinion, because anybody that says that there is this definitive, no, this is what's going on, this is the only solution, this document right here, if you don't dot this I right where I tell you to dot it, this document is not going to work. Okay, it's horseshit. It's all horseshit. Because everything they're basing their entire argument on, no substance, but process, thank you, that's the word I'm thinking of. Sometimes I get a bit of a brain freeze when it comes to that. So they're basing their document on its grammar.
Yeah,
instead of what's actually being said, which is what law is. It's what are you actually saying? What's the substance of your document, right? And one of the problems we found is in the last couple months when we're trying to teach people this kind of stuff is we're finding that people don't understand because they're not up to speed on the core basics of what's even going on. Everybody's been listening to 800 different gurus on YouTube. Everybody is confused as hell as to what is actually going on.
It's very simple. If you're not going to play their game, you don't have to use their rules.
You don't have to use their rules. It's more of, it's very simple. We'll go right back to basics. Everybody's obviously aware of the fact that we were created by God, wherever you believe that to be, right? So I don't care who you want to, the ancients of old, the intellectuals have all got together, agreed, something greater than us created us. They gave us inalienable rights. We were given dominion over this planet. It's ours, man. So we are man, we are a creation of God. So we'll start with that, and I'll tell you where everybody starts to get going wrong. Because I've made all these arguments in court, and I know what works, and I know what has you arrested on the spot. I've been there, I've done it. I've been arrested more times than anybody I know, including people I know that probably should be arrested on a daily basis. So this all comes from experience. So we all know that we've got the big guy up here. God. It's in the Bible, whatever God you want to believe, He created us. God created man.
He gave us dominion over the earth.
Right? And God gave us, we don't even want to get into that yet. So God created man. And obviously then we start to develop a society and we start to develop laws and the whole nine yards and we decide that we need to be able to call ourselves something other than just man because that's all God created. He just created man. Yeah, as soon as we start, every time we start to alter ourselves from what we are created as, we start to alter our rights somewhat, right? So then I come along and I'm like, well, I want everybody to call me My parents said, well, we want to name our son Dean and he's of the Clifford family, so we're going to call him Dean Clifford. And they file a particulars of live birth with the government. and the government sends them back this receipt that we call a birth certificate, and it's got this name on it. Now, we've all heard the theories on what that is. We know what that is. We know what that is. We know what that is. There's no point in even talking about any of that kind of stuff. You can go and you can say, I'm Dean Christopher David of the Clifford family and blah, 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 blah. They don't care. They don't care, and I'll tell you why. Because this name right here includes that name. This name right here, it's a legal name. It's people have referred it to all sorts of things. I've heard the name legal fiction. I've heard straw man, trust, Sestake trust, Sestake V trust. I've heard every name there is out there for what this is, and nobody knows what it is. They've heard it from somebody else. Well, I read the definition of Sestake and Sestake Key trust and blah, blah, blah. And yet nobody knows what it is. They try making these arguments in court. They try saying to the court, that's a trust. Right? Well, you can't prove that. You can't, you know, what makes you think that's a trust?
You can probably make a logical argument for it.
You can make a logical argument, but that logic is irrelevant in court.
Yeah, pretty much.
Law is relevant.
I've seen some real faulty
right?
logic by judges.
Yeah, law is relevant in court, and there's only two forms of law, and we know what those forms of law is. There's God's law, and there's man's law. And God's law is the law where we were told what to do, and that's not open to negotiation. Man was all created equal. No man can tell another what to do, which means that any agreement between man is a contract, and that's contract law, and that's the only other form of law. So it's broken down into two, and that is it. So what is this? And what I've come to believe personally, and I know I'm right because it's worked every single time, is this is a presumption of law. Now, most people think that when you say the word straw man, they actually think it's this real legal identity that's defined and you know has some account file somewhere with the government and it exists and it's this one specific little thing that was created and they can positively identify it. And that's not at all what this is. This is basically for anybody that fishes. You go fishing. You just want to throw a line out there and see what takes the bait. Right? This is a presumption of law. They put this name on a document, and it could be anything. And then from there, they have to get this guy. To fit himself into their presumption. And that presumption is that you're bound by one of their statutes that regulates you, which is a contract. Right? So this name could be anything. This name is a person. This is a person. I've heard people say, I'm not a person because a person defined in that act is this and this and this and this. Well, you only sound like an idiot when you say you're not a person. Of course you're a person. But they redefine the word person within their own act. And that's why you say, well, I'm a person, but I'm a person as defined in Black's Law Dictionary. What definition are you using? Yeah. Oh, no, feel free to...
Just a person, like if you actually look back at the ancient ancestry of the word
persona, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, it comes from the Greek.
The problem is as society evolves, we've all come to call ourselves persons, right?
Right.
We act in the capacity of a capacity of a person. We can go back to ancient laws about where they say, well, it comes from the Latin persona and this and that, and well, I'm not a person and this and that, right? That's actually an irrelevant argument. It's
right.
Really irrelevant. That's why people are losing in court just saying I'm not a person.
But that's where they screw us in the courts because everyone's operating by the more modern definition. If the law society is working by the old definition,
yeah.
If you're a person, you're a personage. Taken an oath of fealty, or you've entered into contract.
Yeah. See, but this is the problem. I can ask 100 different people, I can ask 1,000 different people what person means, and I'm going to get 1,000 different answers. So it's that argument is also irrelevant. It all comes down to And here's the problem.
Well, it's a presumption of law that all parties involved know what they're talking about.
It's a presumption of law in the terms of, and I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this because I'm not used to dealing with this. It's a presumption of law in courts deal in presumptions that until rebutted stand. So if they make this term generic enough, it could mean anything. So any presumption will go. Any presumption. Because they operate on presumptions. And they need you to not rebut those presumptions. Yes.
So most of them are unstated.
Yeah. Yeah, so we all know that the man, you know, is and then when I take it from my own name, I've capitalized it and it's capitis diminutio minima, and then they take my family name away and they capitalize my family name only, and it's capitis diminutio media. That's a medium loss of rights. And then they create this all capital letter name that if I agree to accommodate that name, it's capitis diminutio maxima, and it's a complete loss of rights. And you can't make those arguments in court, right?
You look on bail and recognizance like forms.
Yep.
They have each different type in the different areas.
Yeah, it's a presumption of law, so anything fits into that.
Like this.
You could fit into this presumption of law. It encompasses everything. So from there, you have to start and you have to work backwards and remove the presumptions. Is the way you have to work in this in court. Right, and they have to. Once you rebut presumptions, yeah, like you're just, yeah, it's a presumption of law.
Yeah,
or refute their unstated things.
Yeah, but the thing is once if you start with a presumption of law, then you go on to identify what you know. So you narrow down the presumption from there, and you can basically work backwards from a presumption and go all the way back to a man by rebutting contracts that don't exist, and it restores your rights automatically. So that's why everybody had they think, well, no, that's not me. Well, no, actually, that could be you.
But isn't it easiest just to say, you know, like they say is your name such and such. Well, can you prove I'm even required to have a name?
Well, you are. I mean, unless you want to get locked away, if you're required, if you're gonna live in society, you're gonna have to have a name. They can't just call you man. There's 7 billion mans on this planet. We're
but
all mankind.
I have no ownership. Can I not name myself?
Yes, you can. So it depends on what you're calling yourself in what contracting capacity. When you enter a contract with somebody, you have to pause the...
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I see we have somebody with the hand raised. I'm going to open up the line. If you got questions or comments, go ahead and ask them. Area code 386, could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what your question and comment? 386. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, now these are just some of the little basic nuts and bolts and wiggle pins that go along with occupying that office and how they trap you and the things that you have to watch out for. Because, see, once you step up in the occupying office of the executor, they're not going to want to just readily take a subservient position. They're going to try to throw some tricks up there. But if you are... well-versed in law and you understand the rules of the game and you've know this thing inside out, you can just work your way through it. You don't have to get excited. There's no need for an argument. You can just let them know what's going on and what your position is and make them aware of the fact that you are aware of their position and hold on to that thing. And eventually they have no choice. But to take the position that they can, even though they might try to make sure the rest of the court don't know what's going on, because this is how these people make their money, off the fact that you don't know the law, and everybody coming in there, the majority of them don't know. So when one comes in that do, they'll make sure that if you ever come back again, you never get a chance to come back out in open court if you beat them one time. They'll always have you somewhere where nobody else won't hear what you're doing. They won't hear nobody hollering. We're going to
positively identify yourself for that contract,
yeah.
And you have to be able to be identified.
Uh-huh. Right. Not just I am, or not just I could be, but I am.
Exactly.
Positively.
Right? Otherwise, that's bad faith as well.
Right. But as long as I don't do so with fraudulent or
intent,
malice, I can call myself.
It all comes down to intent. We're going to expand on all this afterwards.
I was told the philosophy when you go into the courtroom is supposed to be that a name is defined by Webster's as that which an object or thing is known, and a definition of word is a speech sound or series of speech sounds. So how can you identify as a speech sound? How can you live in a speech sound? How can you do anything as a speech sound?
You need to be addressed as something.
Absolutely.
I mean, I
well, that's the thing. The argument was that your role in the courtroom is more important than the name.
Yeah. Well, so this is where I'll get on to why it's actually why people got to stop. The same way that people have to stop fearing, you know, the government finding out who you are. Like, I don't care. My name's on a whiteboard. They know where I live. Believe me, you guys have seen my paperwork. If they don't know where I live to come and get me or shoot me or throw me in jail, then they're never going to find out, right? You got to stop fearing them, right? And in order to stop fearing them, you got to stop fearing this name as well. And I'm going to get into the reason why, because you can actually turn it around to your advantage at that point, and that's what we're going to get into, which is the biggest point of everything I'm ever going to make, and that might even have to wait for other days, is the issue of liability. You don't care what name they're calling you. I don't care what name they're calling me. It all comes down to liability. Who's assuming liability for the claims being made, right? And then we get into the other forms of law, which is the contract. Where's the contract? You know, who's compelling me to perform in this contract? I don't care what you're calling me. But you got to provide the evidence that I've been compelled to perform in this name in a contract somewhere. Call me whatever you want, really, because ultimately my name is just three letters long, man. Anything after that is just a construct. It's a fiction. Everything after that is a fiction. Whether it's the all cap, whether it's Dean, all capital only Clifford, those are all constructs. They're just different versions of me for different purposes. And we can't be scared of any of them. We just got to learn how to master them all, which we can do because we're men. We're full unlimited liability. You know, we create our own destinies. We do whatever we want. We take control of things. We're full liability. And you got to learn to actually just to start to pilot this stuff and use it, and say yeah you got that, yeah you got it right, that's me, what's it to you, right? Instead of no you know what, no that's not my name, I'm not a person, right? You can use the legal, you can use the argument, well, do you want the legal person or do you want the man, right? The only reason that works is because what you've done now is you've differentiated the fact that there is a difference between the two names. That also, but even that could be, well, you know, you're all just one same party. But the whole point is once you basically separate separate the name, so now there's, you know, you've separated this name from that name. Now there's two of us, and they only want that name, and that name is now floating out there because you're saying, well, I'm over here, I'm the man, and the legal name is right here. You're distancing yourself from it, but you're not denying that it's you in some capacity because you can still act in that capacity. And that's why you've heard people go to court and make the argument, well, you know, which capacity do you want me here in? Do you want me here in the capacity of the man, or do you want me here in the capacity of the driver? According to the Highway Traffic Act, do you want me here in the capacity of this, capacity of that, capacity, you know, I could be anything you want me to be.
Which hat do you want me to wear?
Which hat do you want me to wear? Exactly. Because that's all that name is it's a presumption, it's just a broad, it's just something, just to get you there, and then hoping you're not going to know how to make the proper, not arguments, but navigate yourself through the court properly. And that is, well, what binds me to that. You know, you guys are calling me this, what is that bound to? Where's the contract? What obligations am I bound to perform in that? Did I agree to it? Was there valuable consideration? What was I supposed to perform? Was I aware of all the... Yeah, and that's the rule of the contract. Then we get into that kind of stuff, right? So you got to be able to know how to get into that kind of stuff. And we'll get into all that kind of stuff later, but then there's, you know, the talking to the judges and the judges ordering you around and ordering the sheriffs and stuff like that. That's all. But the big problem was we wanted to address what the name was. And I don't even tackle the problem of trying to come up with what that name is because, again, that's all it is. It's a presumption. It's a presumption that you are that. And it's a presumption there's a contractual obligation. It's a presumption that you're operating in some capacity, and then you just have to dismantle the presumptions at that point because that's what the courts operate on is presumptions, right? So to go further from there, I guess, actually I didn't really have much of a way, much in the way of a template to work on tonight with this, but okay, where to go from there would be why we're in the problem we're in, and I was... speaking with people about this a couple of years ago, and it finally sank in about a year and a half ago when we got into the whole trust law issue and why, and the different law forms. And why trust law? Because you've got all these differing levels of law that just have different authorities, different jurisdictions, and different levels of force. And you've got obviously statutory law, which is the lowest inferior form of law there is on the planet, right? It's like it's public servant codes is what I call it, right? If you're a trash collector,
just regulations.
It's just, well, it's well, there's regulations in all sorts of different forms of law, but statutory law itself is the lowest form of law.
It's people sitting in a room making the laws to bounce themselves.
Why do they call it public? Well, that's any form of law, but why do they call them public servants, right? They're servants. Those are the slaves of society, right? They're supposed to serve everybody. They're the public servants. So statutes are actually public servant codes. It's the Criminal Code of Canada. It only applies to people that work for the government, agents of government, and they're all public servants.
If you make the argument that, for instance, Her Majesty is a public servant.
She's not.
Okay.
Hang on. We could get into the argument of which Her Majesty, because I could rattle off about eight right now. Right, so yeah, we're not even going to get into which Her Majesty or what Her Majesty is or whether she's a servant or whether she isn't a servant. We're all servants of God, every single one of us, period. Beyond that, doesn't matter. But that's the highest now, okay?
Sorry, if I have to interject, I have to interject right now.
Yep.
We're all students of Earth.
Okay. Different philosophy on life, but it's the same thing, but okay. If I could actually expand on that then. If we're servants of God, that would automatically make us students of the earth, because when he went away and gave us dominion over the earth, he charged us with its care.
Yeah, that's the prime.
So those are actually synonymous theories. Okay?
Yes, I totally agree.
Okay. So, and that takes us to the highest form of law. I just talked about the lowest form of law, which is the servant class. And they've got everything flipped on us now. They've got us convinced in the public education system that government is, they're the masters. Yeah. And we're the servants. And it's completely the opposite way around.
Well, in school, you are a public servant. Like, when you take a kid to school,
I wouldn't agree with that. But we won't get into that right now. So why are we in the mess that we're in? And it's easy to see what happened is, and we all know about the Catholic Church and the mystery schools and how they used to encode everything, and they would phrase things in different words to hide technology and theories and our rights and the whole nine yards. And it really struck me when I read a couple of books, and one in particular, was it Ellen White, The Great Controversy? I read that, and I read a couple other books on religion, and everything for some reason came back to the Holy Trinity. And I've broached this topic before at some of our meetings. And that's where we start to get into trust law, which is what the Holy Trinity is. And that's why the Holy Trinity is so important, because trust law requires this three-party contract. That is trust law, right? And that's what the Holy Trinity is. And the Catholic Church likes to call it what the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, right? So we got the Father. We got the Son. Holy Ghost, back to the Father. So, it just a couple of things hit me in the last couple of years. I was just sitting around, I was just reading parts of the Bible, and I got thinking about it, reading some definitions in Black's Law Dictionary. Kind of dorky like that. Saturday afternoon, I'll be sitting at my beach house, and I'll read a definition in Black's Law Dictionary just for fun, and I'll be like, oh, I don't know that word, so I'll look up that one. Then I'll find a word in that definition I don't know, so I'll look up that word, and I'll just spend 6 hours doing it. And I got through that, and I do the same thing in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. Yeah, nerd. Yeah, and this may even be common knowledge for a lot of people out there in the movement. I don't know if people really understand what it is, but, I mean, the Bible is God's last will and testament. And people never really think about that, about what it is, about what a testament is. And if you look up the definition of the word testament is something left by the testator in a will, like your last will and testament. So you look at, the last testament of God or whatever, the God's testament, it's the last will and testament of God is what that turns out to be, where if you look in the Holy Trinity and you start to realize what we got here is trust law going on, is the Father, who is God, is the testator. And he's also the grantor. So he created man. He did his whatever 7 days. Okay, I'm not going to get into what that actually means. It doesn't matter. It's all encoded. It's all riddles. He came along. He created the planets. He created us. Whatever you want to believe that means is up to you. It really doesn't matter. So he created us. Right? And he gave us dominion over the earth. So he made us the beneficiary. Right? And what else would we have been?
Trustee.
I call it the executor. Right? You don't want to be the trustee.
Well, when you say dominion, this is the same sense.
Yeah.
Dominion of Canada?
Like, you know what?
Dominion means
doesn't
like
matter.
Authority over.
Yeah, like Dominion of Canada. Yeah, it. I mean, they used to have Dominion groceries.
Yeah.
Okay, same thing. Yeah. What's the exactly? What's in a word? What does it mean in that particular usage? Right. So the Holy Ghost. Isn't it weird that it's actually called the Holy Ghost? It's a ghost. It's something that doesn't really.
It's a fiction.
It's a fiction. It doesn't really exist. So they probably changed in trust
that
law.
That doesn't exist.
No shit, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got this legal fiction over here, or.
Think about it. A ghost is form without substance.
It's form without substance, right? But it completes.
Well, that's what a legal fiction is. Sorry, guys.
That's what a legal fiction is over here. So. Trying to think of the proper word to explain that. So I could explain that better. I'm not going to because it's been a really long day, and I could get into that more.
While we're on the topic of what we're talking about, we're going to take a break in about 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, safety break. Yep. So in trust law, you got the three parties, and if you've ever read the trust handbook, you know that this isn't a very accurate diagram. In trust law, you've got the executor, you've got the beneficiary, and you've got the trustee. The trustee is who holds all the property, right? The trustee is the slave. The trustee...
is the acting fiduciary.
Yeah, that's why they call it even a fiduciary trustee, right? And the trustee is who holds all the property in trust, and they have to obey the instructions of the executor for the benefit of the beneficiary. Right? And that's where the trust law, and this is getting into why we're having the problems we're having in the courts and the proof we've got of everything that's going on. This I'll explain better another time when I've had a chance to review what I had to go through months ago to come to that conclusion, because it's not all coming to me right now. But either way, all is important is, you know damn well, just from the Bible, that the last testament of God is the last will and testament by the testator, he who created the trust, who went away and left, and left us as the executors and beneficiaries of everything he left us. But it's all being held in trust by the trustees, right? And that's what makes the trust law complete, is the fact that the trustee cannot be the executor or the beneficiary, and a beneficiary or executor cannot be a trustee. Period. So what happens is when we're walking into court and... this is all stuff we can elaborate on later. I'm just kind of going through this real quick right now to bring everybody if they have questions later. When we walk into court, what's happening, and I've heard every argument on the planet, people told me to walk into court and be the trustee.
Good.
No, you got to walk into court and you got to be the trustee. The trustees hold all the power, right? Like, I mean, there's a million different theories out there, exactly. Right? We all know government's the trustees. They're all public servants. They're all public trustees. Every single one of them. They're all the servants. They're the ones that hold all property for the benefit of the executors and the beneficiaries of all these estates. And I'll get into whatever you want about that later.
A prisoner trustee is a prisoner with special privileges.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you've erred, do they offer you correction as a benefit?
Well, I could make a bunch of arguments on that as well, and I don't believe that at all.
Islam, Hotel, Barigani. What's happening in peace? January 12th through the 13th. Jacksonville, Florida, we will have Summit of the Moors. This is a collective effort to bring about economic security that is a great opportunity for our people to forecast their own future, beginning with a collective approach that could benefit all. The educators, the speakers are all diverse to represent the people who are also diverse in their ideologies. On deck we have Kadara Bey, Dr. Aileen Bey, Julani Bey, Tahaka Amina L. Bey, Abundance Child, Sundiata L., Daraya Bey, the Federation of Southern Cooperative, German Shannon L., Sharif Noble, and myself, Asar Dalo Saku Abur L. Topics will be food security, such things as aquaponics, gold and silver purchasing, technology, cooperative application, the administrative process, and lots more. We also have what's called private side sessions. These sessions will not be recorded, any recording, audio, or visual for the public. You have to be in person in order to get these jewels. And we also have some special guests who didn't want to be advertised that will come and drop more information. I'm urging everyone to go to www.dalosaku.com and register. This is free. This is a free event. It is www.dalosaku.com. DialoSekou.com. January 12th through the 13th, Jacksonville, Florida, Summit of the Moors. Peace.
Okay, Moors, make sure you all, if you all can get here, try to get down here for the Summit of the Moors. It's going to be an awesome event. You get a chance to learn a lot of things. I'll be there along with many, many other guests, and I get a chance to meet you all for the first time. Also, I want to make mention of the fact that the tools that you're going to need to actually deal inside the courtroom and set up your trust and set up your estates, do your will and all that stuff, we have it right here in Tahaka's library. Once you start working on that stuff, we work with you and make sure that before you send anything out, we take a look at it and make sure that all of it's correct, and we take it one step at a time, step by step. So contact me, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m., and we'll get you in there.
Because
okay?
What happens is in court, if they've sent you to jail, it's because you were the trustee and you were being ordered to do something for the benefit of somebody else, because you cannot be the trustee and the beneficiary. Right. If you're ordered to go to jail, it's because somebody else is getting the benefit. So that's a lie that jail is a benefit.
And well, no, that's true. They call it correction.
Because they turn it around.
Correct, right? There you go.
They're offering a service and getting a benefit.
Yes, but you're not getting the benefit. Because you can't. Because the trustees, only the trustees take orders.
Crime college.
Yeah, I know, eh? Yeah, trustees take orders. We got confirmation of that today in court. It was a very simple process. Trustees take their orders from the executor. And it's for the benefit of the beneficiary. I've said that a few times now, but I'm kind of leading that into somewhere.
Isn't that what they do in court?
So what happens, they don't really switch. You've never corrected what's going on in the court. When you walked in, it was presumed you're the trustee. And when you went to jail as the trustee. And the whole time the judge was acting as the executor, because the executor is the one in power. The executor orders.
Beneficiary,
the
Crown?
Crown. Of course. Mm-hmm. And because you're the trustee, you can't be either of the other two positions. So here's how it's going. You've got, and I won't call them a judge. I had to correct them today, that court. Yeah. I will call them a justice. And then you've got Dean over here, who shows up unwittingly answering to the name of the presumption of law that could be anything that turns out to be him when it's all done, because he consented to everything. He didn't rebut anything. So they fit this guy into the mold of the legal fiction.
Just
toss the hat on me, right?
Which is the legal fiction that you'll put up
here. Which is, well, no. And then over here, you've got the crown.
Like the hat on your head, and you don't bother to take it off.
Right.
So it's the public.
Right. The justice and the crown are both government. In trust law, that's supposed to be a V, not GAT. Let me just rewrite that real quick. They do have GATs. gov. In trust law, you can be the trustee. Sorry, my bad. In trust law, you can be the executor or administrator. We'll call it both. Executor / admin. When you walk into a courtroom, who's administrating everything? Who's telling everybody what to do? No, even though people have said, well, the clerk of the court really holds the power. I've heard all these different arguments. It really doesn't matter. The clerk of the court, sure, they file all the paperwork. Ultimately, they're the ones responsible for all this kind of stuff. I really could care less how the power structure within their system works. I'm going to tell you why things go the way they do in the courtroom, and I've proven this. Because the justice, because it's they're presuming, they've made the presumption, and they're acting under the presumption that the justice is the executor and the administrator of everything that's going on there. And the Crown is coming in as the beneficiary wanting a benefit. Crown is saying, I want something. I want this guy to go to jail and I want to seize all the equity in some of his estate or whatever, right? Whatever you want to call it. I wrote benefit, but that's not right. He wants a benefit. Yeah, sure, we'll call it that because he is claiming to be the beneficiary. In trust law, you can be both the executor or the administrator, which is the same thing, and the beneficiary. They can be the same party. And that turns out to be the government because you don't rebut it. And you're left all alone over here.
And because they're just filling it off as I'm representing the government.
You're sitting over here. And I can tell you right now, when the judge orders you to be taken into custody, if you don't go, you're going to be made to go by the sheriffs. And I'll tell you why, because the trustees, when they're ordered to do something, they frickin' do it. Or you'll be made to do it, because it's the job of the trustee to carry out the instructions of the administrator, the executor, or you are in breach of trust.
That's a biggie.
And that is it. That is the biggie. The biggie. That's what's happening when you go to court. People are making all these arguments. I'm not a person. I'm not this. I'm not that. This definition says this, and I've heard it all. I've heard it all. I've even used some of them myself to find myself being hauled away under the orders of this guy right here. Right?
Even hauled away before they even got that.
Yeah, even before that, at times, yeah. It all depends. And it's all come back to this. And this is the problem. And this is what... Why, when you walk in, that's why there is a justice. And there's you, and there's a crown. It's a three-party system that's going on. It's the Holy Trinity going on in court. They're carrying out trust law in the courtroom, and you don't know it. And they're getting you to act as the trustee so that they can fill in both other positions, one of authority and one of beneficiary, which means they win on both counts. Whereas true public servants... or public trustees, because that's what they actually are. They're even bonded. And believe me, they don't like being called public trustee. If you want to bring sheriffs into the courtroom, like that, you call a justice a public trustee. And there'll be four of them in there before you can blink.
What if you ask them if he's a public trustee?
Well, I would start by calling him a public trustee. You got to remember, if the court operates in presumptions...
So can you.
Then I'm going to operate in presumptions. And I'm presuming that this guy up here is a public trustee because he's a public servant.
That is an excellent point.
Absolutely. So, excuse me, public servant. Sheriffs! Sheriffs, get in here! We got work! Right? Like that. They do that. It's insane.
I'm going to put you in contempt.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, you're this close to contempt. Or I just got handcuffed one time. They didn't even say anything. They just handcuffed me, right? So... You know you're doing something right when just saying two words make them lose their minds.
Yeah.
And why? And this has happened with Marty. Marty walked in to speak for a friend of ours as his representative and said, well, I'm the appointed administrator for Chris. And before Marty could blink, there was four sheriffs in that room. And they had a sniper judge for him because they're expecting him because this is about the sixth hearing we've had.
Mm-hmm.
and they just kept getting us come back down and railroading us in the whole nine yards, but not getting anywhere. They couldn't get anywhere with us. It was getting frustrating for them.
Yeah.
So they brought in this sniper judge. We know her name. We got it today, actually, and we filed complaints for her uttering threats in the courtroom and stuff like that. And Marty's pretty much, it's his mission in life now to take her down and remove her career from her. So we're going to have some fun with that. Yeah, because you got to remember, yeah, exactly. Because you got to remember, there's always recourse.
Sorry.
Yep.
That's like this most recent thing in newspapers with this Judge in Cameron thing that he's going to treat people that, you know, with law or free men differently.
Yep.
You know, if he identified himself as free men, he would have treated them differently. But because he said that he wasn't aligned with
yep.
World Free Men Society or whoever, Free Men Association of Canada or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't mean to.
Yeah, no, yeah, so either way, but yeah, so the explanations to get to this point were fast, and I didn't cover them properly, but the whole point was to get to this, because I can just tell you this is the way it is. I'm not even going to entertain ideas from anybody that it's not the way it is. That's my opinion, but the whole little thing we went to takes you right to this. And now here's the problem when you start to switch up the roles and why they get so mad. And you got to remember, this is trust law. They can't violate this. This is the highest law there is, because it's God's law. It's the Holy Ghost. It's the Trinity. Period. They can't get out of this. And the reason they hate this so much, as soon as you walk in, you got this justice, and you got the crown, and you got Dean over here. And now we walk in, and we say, well, public trustee on the bench, and let's just for shits and giggles say that they don't absolutely lose their mind and dump a load in the bench and call the sheriffs. And they just go, oh, yeah, I'm a public trustee. Okay. Well, we just identified the trustee. Okay. Now, who's the executor and the beneficiary? Nope.
You are.
You're both. Always.
Even versus the public?
Always.
Not because of both the justice and the crown and public trustees, then that leaves you as the only to be executor and beneficiary.
We were left. Man was given dominion over all the earth. We were left as the beneficiaries and the executors of the last will and testament of God. It's our birthright. Feel free to say that. Excuse me. I don't give a shit what name you're calling me. Ready?
Well, no.
Ready?
Excuse me for living.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, you're right. I am Dean. And I'm the executor and the beneficiary of the last will and testament of God. Say that.
You say that just that straight.
You can say that if you want. Just say, I'm the...
I'll put you in front of the mental health court.
Yeah, Andrew Swan's new mental health unit. Yeah, exactly. You can just say, well, excuse me, but are you not a public servant? What are they going to say? Well, yes, I'm a public servant. Okay, then you're the trustee. Then you're the trustee. And here's why the crown can't be either of the other ones. Because they're both
government.
You cannot be the trustee and either one of these at the same time. And the government cannot be, because they're both government. They're both agents of the government. They're both this. It doesn't. Ultimately, they're the same person. Exactly. That's actually very good.
A collection of persons can be a person.
Because they're all acting as agents for a person.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Whether or not it's like an anthill. Like there's all these millions of ants running around, right? But they just form one collective, and the anthill is the living person, really, right? So the government's the person, and as soon as you've identified the trustee. And you know that you're the beneficiary, you know this guy cannot be either. And this guy can't be, so you have to be both.
Uh-huh. And they have to follow your instructions because you're the administrator and the secretary.
Who's that? What is your standing here? Who are you? Get out of here! I'm administrating here. What's your claim? Well, at that point, you don't need to start getting into all the deconstructing their presumptions of law. You've done the big deconstruction.
You've established that you're standing.
You've removed the justice from their ability to administrate the proceeding, because the trustee is going to allow anything the Crown brings in, because now the game's rigged, because they're acting as both. And that's why you lose every time, and you better do what the court order says at the end. And there's obviously ways around that, because people skirt around the issues, and they little wins here and little wins there, and you know, stuff like that, like that. The guy in Ontario that went in, that Keith or whatever his name is there, that walked in, and yeah, and he did the right thing where he said, I think he said, I'm the administrator of that account.
Yeah,
and whether or not the judge bowed or whatnot, he didn't really finalize things properly, right? He didn't identify the judge as the trustee. He didn't, or even appoint the judge the trustee, right? So that's what you want to do, is when you walk into court, because it's all operating on presumptions, and they've rigged it, and they've named themselves as certain players in the court, and you haven't identified the players. So one of the last times I went in November, I just walked in and I said, yeah, hi. I said, I'm here regarding that matter, when they called the name. They said, well, who are you? I said, well, I was the man that was pulled over that night. I'm like, well, what's your name? I said, actually, it really doesn't matter, but what names are here. I said, it's really more important what roles we're playing, isn't it? What's your name? I said, for our purposes today, I said, you can call me beneficiary. Are you a public servant? Stuttering, and then, is this that free man stuff? I said, it really doesn't matter what it is. I said, are you not a public servant? Right? And she just ignored that. And she just went on to say something like, well, if you're not the name we're calling, I'm gonna issue a warrant for his arrest. And I wasn't gonna get into it really with them, and I just basically said, I said, I just told you I was the man that was there arrested that night. And you just told me you're gonna issue a warrant for his arrest because he's not here. Thank you for making the judicial determination that I'm not the man you're looking for. Have a good day. Walked out. I'm going to issue a warrant for your arrest. Do whatever you want. I don't care. Walked out. Never heard about it again since. That's all that took. And I didn't even know what my argument was going to be walked in that day. I knew I was going to raise the issue of beneficiaries and stuff like that, but as soon as she said, I'm going to issue a warrant for the arrest of the accused, that's what it was. I just said, well, I just told you I was the man that was arrested that night, spent the weekend in jail. You just told me you're going to have issue a warrant for the arrest of the accused because he's not here. So obviously, I'm not the accused. Thank you. Thank you for your legal determination. Have a good day. You guys sort whatever you want out. Left. That was for 4 traffic charges and obstruction of a peace officer. It took 4 minutes. Never heard about it ever again. And just as icing on the cake, that was January 4th. I was charged November 25th. Next week, I'm sending a little thank you to the court, citing Section 786.2 of the Criminal Code of Canada, which says you've got 6 months to convict somebody in summary convictions from the date of arrest, or it's over. It's game over. It really doesn't matter, though. If they ever try to contact me again, I just get into this now, because now I just send letters to them, right, to Andrew Swan and stuff like that. I can get into some of the stuff I've done that I'm never going to go to jail. They're just probably going to shoot me. I mean, seriously, like some of the stuff I've sent off now, I sent stuff to the Minister of Justice, the Minister of Finance. The one to the Minister of Finance, I actually told her, I said, like, you're not doing, you've failed in your job as a public trustee. The fiduciary trustee that I appointed you as, you didn't provide lawful excuse as to why, blah, blah, regarding a matter. I just said, I'm coming after you. I said, you've committed a breach of trust. I'm coming after you. I'm not going to stop. I'm the executor and the administrator. I ordered the trustee to do something, and she didn't jump. How come the sheriffs didn't walk all over them like they do in court, right? Well, I'm working on that. And I just literally said in the last line, Trevor, you thought that was the funniest thing he's ever read, where I just said, you are going to have to shoot me to make me stop.
And rape your girlfriend.
Well, that was Sandra Swan. Yeah. For the record, the Winnipeg City Police, about 7 years ago, when I first started getting involved in this kind of stuff, actually kicked in the door to my girlfriend's house and threatened to rape her looking for me. So that was Sergeant Hutter and Sergeant Young. If this goes online, congratulations, you're real men. Love you guys. 110-pound woman at 2 o'clock in the morning in her night robe. Yeah, you guys, heroes. So that really stiffened my resolve, by the way, years ago, and now I don't care anymore. I don't care. I'll meet them head on. I'll meet them in court. I read you guys that letter that went out to the Crown Prosecutor earlier today. It said, there's not going to be a lawyer in court next time. It's going to be me. I'm going to be there in my full commercial liability as an executor and a beneficiary. I said, we're going to have a chat in front of the trustee. And I'm looking forward to it. I said, because you're going down. It's the letter that went out, basically what that said. And like that's the way you got to let these guys know. I mean, if you walk into the court and you're like, somebody told me online I'm the administrator, is that right? Okay, you're getting bailed out in about a month. It's over at that point. That's what happened to Marty. The difference is, and we should get into some courtroom tactics stuff later on. I want everybody to understand the philosophy here, though, of what the biggest things going on here is. And that's the fact that once you figure out that the courtroom is just this holy trinity, and that the judge, justice, is trying to fill the role and be the player of the administrator, the executor, that automatically makes you the trustee by default. And then the Crown, basically who is the government. So the Crown is, the reason the Crown is a beneficiary is because the Crown is the government. They're one and the same now, right? They're the same entity. So technically the government is both beneficiary and administrator. They're filling both roles. They're just having two different people play both roles in the courtroom. That's all that's going on, but they're one and the same party. That's why the deck is stacked. And then you're sitting over here as the trustee. Doesn't matter what they're calling you. I don't care what they're calling you. You're filling the role of the trustee, but they're not telling you that. I don't give a shit if they call you George and your name is Bob. It is irrelevant. Of course, it kind of makes it seem a little stupid. Well, actually, my name is really Bob, so I don't mean that literally, right? It doesn't matter who you are at that point. If you're the trustee and you fill the role of the trustee, then you're going to be told what to do by this guy. And if you don't, in comes somebody who's not part of the Holy Trinity. He's called the sheriff because he's supposed to make sure that the trustee does their job, and that's why they're the highest authority on the land. You always hear from people, sheriffs are the highest authority on the land. Why? Because they're the ones that hold the trustee accountable if he doesn't do his job, what he's ordered to do. Yep.
Can you get the sheriff to arrest the justice?
I haven't done that yet. I planned on doing that in January in a City of Winnipeg bylaw violations trial where I was actually... Yeah, I was going to go in and I was going to do that, but then I actually decided that I was going to go in and I was going to try a different tactic, and that was against Marcus Buchart, and I was going to be more honorable and just see where I could get just by dropping hints that I knew what was going on. And City of Winnipeg, you can interrupt me anytime you want for the break, by the way, but the City of Winnipeg was coming after me for bylaw violations on my properties. Now, the problem was I know how to deal with that if it's my own personal properties, but the property was held by one of my numbered corporations for business. And so I went through it's a registered business. I was like, does that mean it's automatically under their jurisdiction? I'm hooped. I'm like, no, wait a minute, that's just a presumption. Just because I went down and filled out some articles and corporations, I'm the one that gave it substance. That doesn't bind me to anything. And I'm like, I still can't go in and basically be the executor and the beneficiary of a corporation. That doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm like, what role would the judge want to fill if the trial was against a corporation? You got to remember, a courtroom will make itself whatever it needs to be for the specific moment. So if it's a corporation before it, if you wanted to be the head honcho of a corporation, who would you be?
We'll get into corporations and people or private businesses after
the break. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so after a safety break, we'll just going to expand on a couple of things I covered before we took a little break there on the fact that the trust law is being carried out in the courtroom here. I'm going to touch a bit on the claim of rights that everybody was big on for a long time and why they're irrelevant, completely irrelevant. And then we're going to get onto some arrest rules here that has to do with the trust law as well, so we'll keep on kind of topic with that. But let's get on to people that want to use lawyers in a courtroom. And everybody believes that a lawyer, you use a lawyer, you're contracting with a lawyer, then the lawyer is automatically contracting you. Yep.
But even getting a lawyer to get you out on bail after remand.
Yeah. Any of these scenarios, right? Everybody's got a mistaken impression of what the lawyer's actually doing, right? Oh, they're all members of the Bar Association, they're all colluding. Well, that part's actually true. But what they're doing is not what everybody thinks they're doing. The lawyer is not contracting you with the court, right? Because they've got all the procedures and their Bar Association nonsense and the whole nine yards. But what's happening is because they're all colluding together and all members of the Bar Association, whether they know it or not, because they are trained, lawyers are trained, your lawyer is trained that they have to obey the master. They're called the master in court. They bow to the guy.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Okay? Who do you bow to?
Your master.
Your master. The if you walk in somewhere and people are bowing to somebody, they're bowing to the guy with the most authority in the room. And who's got the most authority in the room?
You.
Well, technically we do. But what are they operating on? They're operating on the presumption that the judge is the executor and administrator. Because they're bowing to him. He's the top guy. So that's what your lawyer is allowing. Your lawyer is not contesting the fact that you're actually the administrator and the beneficiary. The lawyer is allowing the court to continue on the premise that this guy is the executor and this guy is the beneficiary, which are one and the same anyways. So your lawyer is allowing the court to operate on the presumption that the government is the executor and beneficiary and that you are the trustee. And the lawyer's got no problem doing that, sailing down the river, because he's not the one that's liable.
He's making money.
You are.
That's right.
You're the one that goes to jail when his master orders it, not him. And that's why they're limited liability. Hey, I'm limited liability. You want to go after the full limited liability guy, the guy that's actually going to take the fall here. Go after this guy. So that's what is going on with the lawyers. That's why I've heard the argument, okay, well, I went to court with a lawyer and we won kind of stuff, okay, like you're one of the 3% of people that actually win in court with a lawyer, even trying to make, well, I made my lawyer put that affidavit in the file, and you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's all irrelevant. I'm just going to tell you what's actually going on in the courtroom, and that is that your lawyer, because they're all members of the Bar Association, he does not have your best interests at heart. He has no oath to you, to your best interest, because his oath to the Law Society supersedes that oath, which is a conflict of interest, and which actually kind of, that's your remedy down the road, by the way, if you ever want to go back and say, well, this guy didn't tell me he had a superseding oath, which means that what he allowed to go on in that trial was not consensual. There's no contract, right? And that's a big thing. We could have an entire episode just on no contracts. And that's a fun one. They don't like that. So that's what your lawyer is actually allowing. Your lawyer is allowing the proceeding to continue on the presumption.
But wait, that is consent. If you consent to a lawyer, that is consent to the overall proceeding.
But he didn't get full disclosure.
No full disclosure. He didn't tell you he has a superseding oath.
Right.
Right?
That's
they didn't disclose that's what's actually going on here.
Yeah.
So you were hoodwinked.
Yeah.
Can you be bound to a contract where you were hoodwinked?
Yeah.
Can I sell you a car with no engine if I... Yeah.
All,
I know. Yeah, so you got remedy. There's never too late to go back, right? And that's the one of the great things too. But so that's what's going on when you hire a lawyer. It's not he's contracting me with the court. He's binding me to third-party arbitration and this and that, the whole nine yards. No. What he's doing is he's not contesting the fact that this guy is not actually the executor and administrator. That's all that's going on. He's allowing it to continue on this premise that you're the trustee, you're going to pay fines when ordered, you're going to go to jail when ordered, for the benefit of the government, at the instruction of the government. What?
Okay, and this here's also the same as if you first time come out and actually say something in writing to, let's say, the DMV.
Yep.
You never had full disclosure to the contract.
Yep.
You know, like, if they say that they're offering a license, but they're still showing insurance, you are never shown the full insurance.
Okay,
you're never shown the condition of insurance. And when did you ever...
We spoke about this before we were rolling on the cameras. Something else we can talk about another day even, about the fact that it's impossible for it to be a contract between you and government. It's absolutely impossible. We can get into that to another meeting. We've talked to the people I did talk to here real quick about that. Everybody knows now why, and yes, it's true. It's impossible for you to have a binding contract with the government.
How many lawyers in here at the Mason actually know that they're perpetuating this little fraud?
I like to talk with them about this down at the courts. I'm there frequently. I was there for 7 hours again today. I got to spend more time on my actual career that pays the bills because
yeah.
I spent a lot of time in this one. But they smile a lot. And then suddenly a lot of them don't want to talk to you anymore.
They go silent, Dave.
Right. So a lot of them know. If they don't know,
they suspect
or they have, you know, like a vague comprehension of what's really going on.
Judges know, or they're just robots.
Most judges know. I think there's no question about that because the judges are all picked from lawyers that they know are very aware of what's going on, are comfortable with the idea that they're screwing people, and have no problem committing this fraud against people. And actually, I don't even like to use that word. It's not fraud. There's no such thing as fraud because you're not contesting it.
Yeah.
Right? So I've heard people say, well, that's fraud, or, you know, people have been charged with defrauding court.
And cops can lie to obtain consent.
Yes.
It's not fraud.
It's not fraud if you don't know your rights. That's not fraud.
Okay.
Right? I don't even like that word. I tried
yeah,
to... Ten, there you go. I try not to use that word even. I let it slip out there. So.
Yeah, I was kind of saying it in quotes.
Yeah. It's like the word, you've defrauded this court or something like that, right? And it's like, I've defrauded this court, so I've done the opposite of fraud? Isn't that good?
I've removed the fraud from the court? Whoa.
Right?
Isn't that a good thing?
Then you get some of that again, right? You always know when you're right. Because they freak out, right? That's when they lose their minds. Otherwise, they're very calm. They're always like, Sheriff, take this man away, right? He's calm because he knows you don't have a clue and you're screwed. As soon as there's yelling and they're freaking out, well, you're on the right path. Because that's when they start getting belligerent.
And that's one of the clues that you know that they don't have know what to do next.
They know what to do, believe me. They'll a lot of times if like I say, like we have one friend that Marty's been going to court with a couple times now, about five times in a row before they finally brought in their sniper judge that every argument Marty brought up, and he wasn't really as prepared as he should have been, and as soon as the sheriff came, he did the old, I'm not going to jail for this, and sat down kind of thing, right? So, yeah, whereas I told everybody here the story about I sent a first-time guy, my older brother. He knows a little bit about this, but not much. I sent him into family court for the first time of his life in Alberta. First hearing, we filed an affidavit and a motion for motion to quash in the court. He went down, filed it in the court at 8:30 in the morning. Court was at 2:30 in the afternoon. Went up to the courtroom, had copies for the Crown. They actually used Crowns there, I think. It was the weirdest thing for family court. Maybe it was a private lawyer. I can't remember. Either way, so he served, gave the lawyer, walked up to the clerk of the court, asked her. He goes, "Did you guys receive my affidavit earlier today?" And she's like, "Are you this guy?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's me." "Oh, yes, we got it." He's like, "Oh, okay, that's kind of weird." So he goes and he sits down. The judge came in and he basically sat. He just stood up and said, "I'm here regarding that matter." That was it. And she, "Mr. Clifford," blah blah blah, blah blah blah. He didn't address the name at all. That's why the name game is absolutely irrelevant. I can prove it. I know it because it happened with my brother. Didn't even address the name. Just said, "I'm here regarding that matter. Your name that you labeled me with, I don't care. I'm here regarding that matter." "Mr. Clifford, blah, 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 blah." 5 minutes later, right? And she just looks at him. She's like, "How do you wish to proceed?" He goes, did you read my affidavit?" "Well, yes, I read your affidavit, Mr. Clifford." And she's been kind of nice to him, right? And he's like, "Well, motion to quash." "Mr. Clifford!" 3 minutes later, and she knew she was just trying to draw him into an argument that was irrelevant. He knows that, because unfortunately, I hate to admit it, he's kind of smart like that sometimes, and I've taught him well. So after about 2.5 minutes of that, she's like, "How do you want to proceed?" "Excuse me, did you read my affidavit?" Yes, Mr. Clifford, I read your affidavit. Motion to quash. Mr. Clifford, there's children at stake here. Blah, 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 blah. 4 minutes later, he had to interrupt her. He finally said, excuse me. Did you or did you not read my affidavit? Yes, Mr. Clifford, I read your affidavit. Motion to quash. Next thing he knows, there's two sheriffs coming up on each side of him. Right? He just looks side to side. And Darren's a big guy. He's about 210, 220, I think. He's my height, maybe about an inch taller. And he's just, he looks like Razor Ramon from WWF Wrestling. You know, like the toothpick kind of guy. Like, hey, you know, like I'll take you down kind of stuff. And he looks to the side of him, and there's these two sheriffs. They had this thing scripted. They had this thing scripted. They had a guy with an earpiece in the corner waiting for the appropriate time to call the sheriffs in. They were waiting for him. They had it all ready to go. They had the two sheriffs there for intimidation. They just slipped in uncalled. And he just let, I thank God I told him to prepare for that. I said, be prepared for sheriffs. When they walk in, this is what you do. He said, excuse me. Are these two gentlemen public servants? And right away, her head just went down. And he said there was an awkward silence for about a minute. And even he was like, this is just getting awkward. So finally he just goes, well, he goes, it appears they are public servants. So on and for the record, they do not have my consent to touch me. They don't have my consent to intimidate me. I want them to back away from me right now. And they just scurried off to the corner a little bit. And she just looks, and he said she just basically looked up and she just went, how do you want to proceed? He goes, I think my business is done here. He turned around to walk out. She goes, Mr. Clifford, I can file a something, something, something in your absence. And he turned around and he just went, and kept walking out. And he said, just the look on these two sheriff's faces, when he walked by the one guy who was a half a foot taller than him, the guy was going, looking at the judge, like, tell me to do something, right? What arguments did he make? Did you read my affidavit? Motion to quash. That was it. The rest was in the affidavit. He didn't have to say a thing in court. That was it. It was about preparation. That's something else we can get to another time, right? First-time guy, never been in any of these situations before in his life. He never heard about it ever again. They've never contacted him. They never answered the motion. Isn't that kind of weird? Three times motion to quash. They didn't grant or deny the motion. Uh-huh. Just the threats. I can issue a warrant for your arrest in your absence. Yeah, I care. And walked out. That was it. No more summons, no more letters, no more nothing. That was the end of it. And that's all you had to do, right? So I can't remember why we got in that topic, but that's okay. But that's just how easy this kind of stuff is. So, but what he did was he didn't allow the judge the position of authority. I think is what's going on. They couldn't jockey him in a position. It was even a preliminary hearing where they're trying to set up the players. And I don't think they even got around to that. That's kind of my thinking on that. They didn't even get around to setting up the players of what was going on. He kind of just took control of the situation, just kind of said, well, you read my affidavit, motion to quash. No, okay, well, see you later, bye.
When he was leaving, would it have been better if he just turned and said, you don't have my consent for that, and walked out?
No, I think what he did was better.
Oh, okay.
Because it's more...
questioned his authority.
Yeah, it is more like...
They have to question
Who are you?
I
don't give a shit. I don't give a shit what. Go ahead. I don't care what you do.
Servants, masters, like, do whatever you want. Claim it's like a little kid.
Yeah.
We've got 2 minutes left. Did you have anything else to say about what you were just talking about, this case or whatever? That
not about that one, but just real quick. Can we talk about the lawyer stuff?
Yeah,
so that's gone.
About 2 minutes left.
Okay. Yeah, okay. We'll briefly cover. We'll do it more in a couple of minutes, but we'll do arrest rolls and claim of right real quick.
Well, we can do it.
Yeah. So, because this is the side of the road. A lot of people have a problem with the side of the road, and they think they got to do the old peace officer. Did you observe me breach the peace? You know, yada yada yada.
Actually, what I think.
There you go. The whole nine yards. The problem is, if you call them a peace officer, they've got peace officers defined in every different act in different roles. So they can be a peace officer under the Highway Traffic Act. So are you a peace officer? Yes, I am. He's not going to tell you he's only a peace officer under the Highway Traffic Act in that instance. Right? So you're sunk.
I believe in lawful definition.
Well, yeah.
Operating under a different definition.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You got if you guys are going to be doing business side of the road, you got to identify the players right away, right?
Yeah.
So, why is it the judge has, or sorry, not the judge? Why is it the police officer has the authority to stop you, question you, and then write up an order and carry it out on the spot?
Presumption.
Yes, but why does he have that authority? How could he possibly have that authority?
Because we granted it to him.
We just covered this.
Because he's the executive.
He's acting as...
Oh, he's acting as administrator.
He's acting as administrator and beneficiary of the trust on the spot. And you're the trustee, and you're not doing what he told you to do.
That's your first quarter.
He's making the presumption that you're the trustee.
Right on the side of the road. So you got a cop that pulls you over, and that's the arrest rolls right here, because people wanted to talk about that when we got back. The arrest rolls when you get pulled over. And people are, I even did that one time. Excuse me, are you a peace officer? And the guy's like, yeah, I'm a peace officer. I'm like, all right, well, what's your claim against me? He's like, I don't need a claim against you. And I was like, well, that's blah, blah, blah. And I got kind of mad about that, right? And then the guy, but he was right. He was absolutely right. He's the executor. He's acting as the executor, and I didn't remove that from him. Right? I got a friend that calls that stripping titles.
And they understand this?
Yes, they know this.
Okay, they do.
Absolutely. And
this is a whole new lesson, though.
This is a whole new lesson. So we'll get into that another time, but that's basically what's happening at the side of the road. Is you've heard people... you've heard people say it before, so we can further explain that about you're holding court at the side of the road. People used to tell me that 5 years ago, and I'm like, what are you talking about? You're not holding court at the side of the road, right? Well, in trust law, you are. Because court is any administrative proceeding where the three parties are present. And they are.
Yeah.
Because he's two of them, and you're the trustee.
That makes your next appointment the appellate court.
Well, then they just railroad you through from there. They just continue on with the presumption from there. They make it more formal. They add more players. Right?
That's an excellent
Yeah, so we'll get into that another time, but what you would do in that situation, because then it gets to be fun. So we can get arrest rolls gone. Claim a right. Yeah.
See, actually, this is something that I would like to say. Do you mind if I...
No, how about it?
Okay. I am Patrick. I'm the current Chief Administrative Officer of the Canadian Chapter of the Royal Criminal Society. I know that it's a mouthful to say, but the claim of right is one of the big spots that people stumble at, because the claim of right can be... apply to anything. It's not just a demand for free hydro or demand for whatever. It's hey, this is my life. You know, you got something coming into on my life.
Yep.
This is what I live. Anyway, but the claim of right itself can be applied to any situation. It's a procedure. It's not just a solution. So you've got to open up negotiations. You've got to say, hey, this is what I believe. Do you believe something else? And you don't. And these are things that can be entered into legal proceedings if you want to take this commercial,
$1 contract.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
The claim of right is really confusing for some.
It is. So the premise of the claim of right, for people who don't know what that is that people have written up 100-page documents where they've gone through and they've decided, I want to let the government know all the rights that I have. I want them to let them know that if I want to walk out in my yard and cut my grass to 1.5 inches, I can do that. And they think that they got to write these giant, thick documents up. Oh, man, if I don't get that one in there, I don't have the right to do that either, right? Okay, the problem with that is, why don't we turn that around? If you want to do a claim of right, the claim of right you should be sending to the government should be one line long.
Okay, but wait.
Okay, well, hang on.
The claim of right is also a legal defense.
I'll get into what would be a better legal defense than the claim of right. The claim of right you should be sending to the government is one line long. Provide proof of claim for something that you're alleging I cannot do.
Perfect.
Yeah, we came up with that. I got looking at these documents. I'm like, oh my God, like this guy's got his right to shave his beard after 2 days on this document. Like, they're not saying we don't have these rights. No one's ever said we don't have these rights. That's not what the problem in court is. It's not that we don't have rights. And if you want to establish your rights for what, if you think that you need that, that needs to be necessary, then the only argument you need to make as government is I'm going to give you 21 days to send proof that I'm not allowed to do something. Guess what? If they don't send you a reply, then I guess other than not harming somebody, you can do what we already know. Anything you want. That alleviates the need for all that nonsense. So we just turned that right around on them. And then I decided after that, I'm like, well, instead of even sending that, I said, let's just go a couple steps further with that. We can get into that in another thing altogether,
yeah,
but
Sorry, I didn't mean to drag
yep.
you off.
No, it's all good. But so instead of the claim of right, you can narrow down what a claim of right is. And I've talked with this with a number of people here. And that's basically that I think the fee schedule was the most important part of the claim of right. Now, that's not a claim of right. That's a contract offer. Right? Now, the theory on this, and it's completely correct, is that your rights have a price attached to them, whatever you think that they are. So you can consider, and I like to use the car lot approach on this one because it helps people understand how to negotiate with the government. It's not even a negotiation. I don't even use that word anymore. It's not a negotiation, right? Your offers are non-negotiable. And this is why. Your rights have a price attached to it because only you can determine what they're worth. So you have a car lot. You're a car salesman. Here's your little car building lot, right? Building right here is your office. Office. Okay. Yeah, it's whatever. Okay, and here's your compound, right? And this compound encompasses what is your life and your rights and what you're able to do, what God left you as your estate, right? And everything's in here. Doesn't matter what it is. Every right is like a car. So you got all these little cars over here. I don't care if they're Pintos. I don't care if they're the most. I don't care if it's your right to shave. This one is my right to wake up in the morning. I don't care what it is. You send them a fee schedule to let them know that violating any of your rights is worth, okay, what, $1 million? $1 million. Okay? Now you got, so all your rights could fill this car lot if it's your rights are imaginary car lot. So what you're saying to the government is you're not negotiating at all. You want the government to know that when they come onto your car lot and they purchase a car, your price is clearly listed on the windshield and it's $1 million and it's non-negotiable. At that point, it's their choice if they want to buy the car or not. And if they want to buy the car and kick your teeth in, then they're going to pay your price. And it's their choice at that point. And that's contract law. Because you've given them notice in advance that that is what your rights are. And if you don't like my prices, then don't buy cars from me. And that should be your attitude with the government. If you don't want to have to pay $11 billion, I don't care what it is, make it something ridiculous. I really don't care, right? Because we'll get into how you can enforce that. And it's been done.
A trillion.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the end, and I hope that we was able to glean something from the information that was put down about trust law and contract law and handling yourself in the court and stuff and what you can and can't do and the different angles from which you can do different things. And it's based on what your understanding of law is when you study. Then there are other things that you can do that you have the right to do, provided you're in the proper position to do these things. And the more you know, the more you can do. And it becomes very, very easy and simple for you. There's nothing complicated about it. There's not a whole lot All you got to do is study it. If you could just get a trust manual, study the trust manual. I have that inside my library. Those of you who have my library, you can go right in there and study Weiss's trust manual. That's one of the best one ever created. We've come to the end of the broadcast. Don't forget about the Mortgage Summit. That's going to be held here January the 12th and 13th. And I hope you all have gotten something out of this thing. I've been your host, Tahaka Monterey Bay. And until next time.